Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4-KIDS.
I have an iPad and four different screens. I don't even know where to look for the screens.
Steve Stone.
We're here. Which is great.
White Sox TV analyst.
The glass is mostly full.
How do you keep your glass?
Mostly full. A rosy outlook. A positive bias.
Sorry, I'm floored. I've run out of words.
Former Cy Young Award winner.
He's my all-time favorite White Sox player.
I was a member of the Southside Hitmen in 1977. One of the most exciting White Sox teams in history.
Steve Stone.
This is voting on the best things in the world. Just things that we love, things that are great. And the 15 seed in the producer's region is passive-aggressive Steve Stone.
You take a look at what he did last year. It wasn't overly impressive.
Now I got something for you, big boy.
Just know that particular version of you is a favorite of our producers.
It's hard to really sit a guy who went 5-for-5.
Some managers don't think so.
Well, that will happen on occasion. It has happened in Sox history, but we won't get into that.
Just to be nominated is an honor. You don't have to win. Isn't that what people say? You know, you don't have to win anything. Just to be nominated is a great honor.
And dip your toe there a little bit.
All right, Stone Pony, thank you very much. Breaking down the game of baseball for more than 3.5 decades.
There's 30 teams out there that could use a guy's expertise like that.
Steve Stone with Bernstein and Rahimi.
Where did your meme go? Oh, I don't know. He just dissolved.
Starts now.
Poof.
I don't even think we need Steve. That open is so good. We can just keep playing that instead of actually talking to him. But we will anyway. Steve Stone is on Twitter, at Steve Stone. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Stoney, how are you?
Good, Dan. How are you? Layla, how are you?
Hi, Stoney.
Yeah, we're good. It was just a crackling affair last night to watch a real old-fashioned pitcher's duel, and it's the first time for me the extra inning rule really felt discordant and weird and tacked on and off-putting. Maybe they could have an exception for 0-0 ties.
Well, that's something that the people have talked about. I mean, it was such a good ball game. Those guys were at the top of their game. They threw exceptionally well. Bieber's stuff reminded me when Kluber was winning his Cy Young Award, or plural, I think Cy Young Awards, he threw a breaking ball that looked like a fastball out of his hand. It didn't go up. It just pretty much stayed on the same plane and then dropped out of sight. That's exactly what Bieber was doing last night. So both of these guys doing exceptionally well, both of them doing it in a different way, but equally as effective. And it was a whale of a ball game until, unfortunately, the 10th inning came around. But, it's interesting. I understand the philosophy of baseball. They don't want you to decimate your bullpen going a 19-20 inning ball game, but maybe there can be an adjustment. And one of the adjustments that I heard that was pretty good, it's a tremendous advantage to put a man at second base where, you know, you bunt him over, you get a sacrifice fly, he scores. How about putting him at first base? So you inherit a base runner, but you don't inherit a base runner in scoring position, which makes the offense work a little bit harder to do what they're going to do and makes it a little more difficult to score a run. So, yeah, maybe you go 11 or 12 innings, but you don't have an abrupt ending to what was a classic pitcher's duel this last night.
It really was, and I gripe that it was ruined for a couple of reasons, but to have that kind of atmosphere, too, and the intensity from the pitchers, and you saw Giolito screaming as he walked off the mound because he was so fired up. It almost even had a playoff intensity in April. It is so rare that we get that kind of gem of a game. And I'm sure from a pitching standpoint, it was an appreciated one on your part as well.
Now look, it just shows you when you get two of the top of the line pitchers, two of the best in baseball, at the top of their games, hitters go up there, but they're not going to be too consequential. I mean, you look at the stuff both of these guys threw. You look at Giolito throwing his changeup in any count. The breaking ball that Bieber was throwing, whether it be a slider or a curveball, was just unhittable. And you have a lot of guys expanding their zones. You know, everybody talks about the Sox offense being a non-contributing offense in many junctures. And, yeah, that's true. However, you take Anderson and you take Eloy out of the lineup. Engel at times was very good offensively as well as his defense. Even Billy Hamilton was doing a nice job, but I don't consider him because he wasn't going to be a regular. But the other three were. And you take them out of the lineup, you miss a third of your offense. And I don't care what team you are. When you lose a third of your offense, when you lose a couple of All-Stars, you lose a batting champion, you lose Silver Slugger Award winners out of your lineup, you're not going to be as effective. And when you're trying to mix and match, the only thing that I looked at and thought it was a little weird was Nick Williams hitting fifth. I mean, the experience of Williams as opposed to Lamb, I could have seen Lamb hitting fifth. That was obviously Tony's choice. He felt that was the best lineup against Bieber at that point. But the way he was thrown, nobody was going to hit it. But it shows you the lineups you have to run out there until your injured players come back. And that's just been the case. You take three of the big bangers. I don't know. Take Ramirez and take Reyes and take Rosario off the Indians' offense. It's not a good offense anyway. You delete those three guys, and it's no offense. And then they'd be complaining about the fact that they couldn't hit the ball out of the ballpark either. So I don't think any team is immune to injuries. You just have to hope that the injuries aren't to essential players, and the Sox injuries were to essential players.
I just hope that Andrew Vaughn was brought to the big league team to play for the big league team. And when Tony says, well, he's got to earn his at-bats, apparently Nick Williams doesn't. I have no idea who Nick Williams is. And maybe it's handedness, maybe it's experience, but I would really like to see Andrew Vaughn play a little bit more and see if we can recapture some of what he was doing, hitting the ball hard in spring training. I know it doesn't matter. I'd like to see it more. Do you know if the communication between the dugout and the front office is operating in a healthy, modern fashion at the moment?
I think it certainly is. But, you know, you can look at all the numbers you want to. Tell me about the numbers of Bieber against Vaughn. There are no numbers.
Right.
Tell me about the numbers of Bieber against right-hand hitters. Well, most of the time they might as well go home. I think Tony is trying to ease Vaughn into the lineup in situations where he can have the best chance to succeed. I'm not saying it's the right way. I'm saying that it's a way to make him look better than playing him against right-handed slider ball, curveball pitchers who are just off the charts good against right-handed opponents. And obviously last night with Bieber throwing like he was throwing right-handed, left-handed, cross-handed, straddled the plate. I mean, it wouldn't matter. Nobody could hit him. But you want to give a young hitter the best chance to be successful. So I assume Vaughn's going to play against just about every left-hand starter. I assume he's going to play against maybe the 4 and 5, perhaps the occasional 3 right-handed starter. But the 1s and 2s, the right-hand starters with extremely good sliders and curveballs, Tony feels he would be overmatched at this point of his career. And I like you, want Andrew Vaughn to get as many at-bats as possible to see what he can do. I, like you, believe that sitting on the major league bench is not as effective as playing somewhere. This is an unusual year again, folks. We don't have minor leagues playing right now. Normally, we would. Well, we don't. So sending him to, to extended spring or to the area in Schaumburg where you're playing inter-squad games or anything along those lines, not as effective as real baseball games. And so maybe in a different year, Vaughn wouldn't be here right now, but this isn't a different year. This is what we have to play with, and you have to take extenuating circumstances into account. And there are no ideal answers. They're just the answers the manager feels will work best.
And I understand that might be part of the logic regarding why Yermín Mercedes, who far and away leads his team in hits, was also not in that starting lineup. But how do you balance his offense compared to what Shane Bieber was doing right now? I think that that's a quintessential managerial question, but it definitely was more obvious after what happened yesterday.
Well, look, I have never been a major league manager, but I have viewed a lot of them. And I will tell you, in the at-bat he did have against Bieber, it was a quality at-bat. I think Yermín Mercedes gives you a quality at-bat almost without exception every at-bat. For me, he's in my line. If I'm looking for offense, Mercedes is in my lineup every day until he proves to me conclusively that he shouldn't be there. It's just the opposite of Vaughn. Mercedes is a 10-year minor leaguer. He can hit. He hit everywhere he went in the minor leagues. He hit in two spring trainings. He's hitting in the major leagues now. I can't rationalize when this team is not hitting, not having Mercedes in the lineup. That's just me. Tony is a longtime manager. He sees it a different way as far as when he wants to rest Mercedes. But I have yet to see him overmatched, even against some really good pitchers. So I want to see him as often as possible. I'd like to see him in the lineup quite a bit. And, you know, there's a couple of reasons why. He extends at bats. He makes a pitcher work a little bit harder on him. And, you know, is he going to hit at 485 feet all the time? I think that was the aberration. But he does put the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out. He extends at bats. And he makes pitchers use many times 6, 7, 8 pitches. If you got to do that on a continuing basis against just one hitter in your lineup, you're not going to be around later to throw to the other hitters. You're going to be in that bullpen. So that's a philosophy that I would have. I want to see the pitchers tell me that he can't hit, because right now there's no pitchers telling me that Mercedes can't hit.
We talked a lot about Liam Hendricks and the rocky start to his season, and it looks to me, and we saw this in his last appearance, I don't think the stuff is quite there. And I saw a lot of too many foul balls, too many bats that went unmissed. Does he still have a little ways to go to get in prime shape?
Well, I think you'd like to see closers out there a little more frequently. I mean, we haven't had those kind of games that would be conducive to him coming in. But last night, Tony brought him in a situation where he was facing the meat of this lineup. He was facing 3, 4, and 5. I mean, you're facing Ramirez, you're facing Rosario, and you're facing Reyes. Those are the three guys that get it done for the Indians, and almost without exception, if they don't get it done, it doesn't get done. So that was like a save situation, even though the Sox didn't have the lead. Hendricks came in and threw the ball real well last night. If you're looking for bright spots in that ballgame, it was Liam Hendricks. He said it was a bit of a mechanical adjustment that he made, and who knows, maybe talking to Ruby helped him a lot. But he's a unique character, but he's got really nice stuff, and his 96 upstairs has a lot of life to it. His slider was really good last night. I'm not concerned with Liam Hendricks. I think the more we see him work, the better he's going to be. And the only way you can see him work more is play some closer games, play some games where you actually have the lead, where he has an opportunity to save it. But I really liked what I saw from yesterday's performance.
Good. I'll get off the ledge then. Good.
Please get off the ledge. I think looking at the problems the Sox have had, Liam Hendricks would be one of the least of your worries.
Let's stay in the bullpen, though, Stoney. And
let's absolutely stay in the bullpen.
I like it. And examine what we've seen out of Garrett Crochet. We've talked about his velocity a little bit in spring training amongst ourselves, have discussed it a little bit so far this season. What's your evaluation of him so far?
Well, it doesn't take a road scholar to figure out that the velocity is down over last year. So you have to ask yourself, was last year the aberration, or is he going to be a 96-97 guy? Believe me, 96-97 is good enough. He can win at 96-97. But to do that, you have to throw more sliders and more changeups. you can't just stay 96, 97, especially with him. The fastball is a little straighter than most. Because he comes over the top, he doesn't have that real good darting movement at the end that a lot of left-handers have. You watch a lot of left-hand pitchers that are about, oh, let's call it high, even low three-quarters, and you'll see that ball come in and dart away from the right-hand hitter. Because Garrett throws over the top, he doesn't have that. So he's got to depend on backspin to get a little extra life upstairs, and so far we haven't seen it. I mean, Ahmed Rosario came off the bench last night, took a 96 or 97-mile-an-hour fastball. It was literally right down the middle and straight as a string and drove it into left center field. He can't afford to make those pitches. So last year at 101 or 100, maybe you do aim for the middle of the plate. But this year, if he's going to stay at 96, 97, it doesn't worry me what happens at that velocity, because a lot of guys are at that velocity, especially straight over the top. You have to start throwing more for the corners, not the middle of the plate. Now, if he's trying to aim at the corners and missing, that's another story. But if you're going to stay at 96, 97, you better throw a few more sliders and you better mix in that changeup. He's got a good changeup. But if he doesn't use it, 96, 97 in this era of baseball, if you're going to use the middle of the plate, they're going to beat you badly. That's just kind of the way it is, because everybody sees 96, 97 from most guys out of the bullpen. There's a huge difference in 96, 97 on different pitchers. You look at Hoyer's 96, 97. Of course, he gets up to 98 and 99, but he has a lot of life to it. It's because of his release point and arm angle. Crochet doesn't have that. He's very true. He's over the top. Reminds me a little bit of the fastball of Matt Thornton.
I was just going to say Matt Thornton or Alan Embry were the two names that I was thinking of.
Yeah, Thornton was a little more successful. Alan Embry seemed to get racky-tacked a lot because he was very true. And they both threw 98, but they both used a lot of the plate. And Thornton was very good. He had a really good run. He couldn't get the ball over the plate until Don Cooper worked with him, and then he became very good for the Sox for a period of time. But, yeah, 96, 97 straight over the top, you need to hit the corners more and you need to vary things a bit. And if he's going to stay there, and we don't know. You know, he had some arm difficulties last year. We know it ended his season. And so if Crochet is going to be a 96 or 97 guy, then they're going to have to work on maybe getting a little more movement. I'm not convinced he's going to stay there. I think maybe with some more work we're going to see 98, 99 again. That remains to be seen. I don't know yet. But I know he can win at that velocity, but he has to change things around.
Stoney, thanks. As always, appreciate it. And great job with Len Casper, by the way, after I got over the novelty of that and how strange it sounded. That was two very professional broadcasters sounding really good together on TV.
Agreed.
Well, that's going to happen a few more times. You know, it's great. It was a great addition to our broadcast crew. Len is a true professional, and whether it's radio or television, he's going to do a great job for you.
Stoney, thanks. We'll talk next week.
Okay, take care.
Steve Stone,
TV analyst for the White Sox on NBC Sports Chicago. I want to mention that Kyle Hendricks is not at the ballpark. The Cubs have said that he's going to head home separately from the team. David Ross, at least according to the Twitter of Paul Sullivan, said that he's still feeling under the weather. Hendricks is feeling under the weather, and all of the players that they've placed on the injured list protocol are doing okay today. We will continue talking baseball with Cody Decker, who is waiting in the wings for us next on The Score.
Premier voice of the White Sox and one of the top voices in baseball, Steve Stone, talks Sox three times a week on The Score.
Looking down the road, Michael Kopech will move into the starting rotation. Let's talk 2021, this year. It's not necessarily what's best for Michael Kopech. It's what's best for the baseball team.
Don't miss Chicago baseball icon Steve Stone talking Sox three times a week throughout baseball season on Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, I'm fired up baseball guy.
I wish more guys pissed me off when I played.
Cody Decker.
Hey, Cody, why do you not like the Brewers?
trash organization. The launch angle craze is absolute madness.
Outfielder Cody Decker.
If you don't take advantage of the data, then don't play this game. I got into a fist fight with Mauricio Dubon in the dugout.
Center field, Mauricio Dubon.
I had to lead off that inning. First pitch, I hit a ball 470 feet.
Swing and a drive into deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone. It's gone. Cody Decker with a game-winning two-run home run.
Baseball analyst Cody Decker.
Anytime you make any swing adjustment, you're really just changing your contact point. That's it. If you're creating length back the opposite direction, everybody throws 97 plus now. You don't have the time to get on a certain plane. Specifically, if you don't know what pitch is coming. You don't know what pitch is coming and I'm going to try and get on the same plane as the pitch? Why am I getting on plane to a pitch that I don't know what it is? I have to adjust to other pitches. I have to be ready for a fastball, adjust to a slider, adjust to a changeup. I should be able to recognize the pitch and make the adjustment. The end. That's how hitting is done.
I'm locked in.
I would go back and play for the Brewers for free before I ever put on the Rockies purple ever again.
Cody Decker with Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Strong stuff. Cody Decker, he's on Twitter at Decker6. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park or at apnissan.com. Check him out on Twitch as well. He is there at twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Cody, that's good. You're smiling along with Jordan Malley's produced open there.
Well, I really, really enjoyed that produced open. One complaint, you didn't finish the Dubon story. Yes, I got into a fist fight with Dubon, then I homered, and he was waiting for me with a hug at the top of the step. That was the ending of the story. It wasn't that I just, like, beat up Mauricio Dubon and we all moved on with our day.
Well, Wilson Contreras did it last night. He internalized his dissatisfaction and his frustration, and he took it out on a baseball, and they won the game.
He did. And you know what's so funny? Earlier in the game, after watching some of that game and seeing Wilson Contreras get hit again on up and in fastball. Now, keep in mind, it's very clear that pitchers just want to throw him up and in. He's very much on the plate. He's got an elbow guard the size of Barry Bonds. I don't know why that's even a legal elbow guard at this point. But, you know, I can understand any player getting fed up with getting thrown at, whether it's purposeful or not. I tend to believe, again, that pitch did not really seem like it was totally purposeful. If you're going to throw a pitch with purpose, you're going to hit him square in the back. You're not going to graze his elbow guard, especially in a 2-0 ball game at that time. It was a tight, tight ball game. And it's also an in-division rival. I don't think they're trying to put runners on in major situations. Now, throwing at Woodruff, hey, I'm not entirely against throwing behind the guy. I think the stupidest unwritten rule in baseball is the whole concept of, well, you can't throw at pitchers. Well, the pitchers are throwing at you, and I'm tired of me getting hit for my pitchers making decisions. So I'm not totally against throwing behind Woodruff. I think it's a bit aggressive. I think everyone did a good job of kind of tampering down emotions after that. And listen, if you don't like guys getting fired up, being thrown at, benches clearing, then you don't get that pimp job home run from Contreras where he threw the ball further than he hit the ball. I'm sorry, threw the bat further than he hit the ball. I nailed it the first time. I don't care. I heard it both ways.
I agree with you. It's fine. We do it all the time around here. This is what live radio talking is all about. Now, I'm to derive from what you just said that you're still okay with the idea of a love tap or some kind of, hey, I'm here from an opposing pitcher to somebody on the other team when you feel like it's warranted?
Listen, I'm very much on the new school. Like, I don't throw at guys all that much. But if you hit me in my left butt cheek, I just simply don't care. You throw at my head, we have a problem. That's dangerous. If you're purposely headhunting, yes, we're going to fight. You throw at my lower back, my butt, my leg, hey, message sent, I'll go to first base. I'm fine with that. Really, I am. I've had it bats where I've gotten in the box and stepped in the box, and I've looked at the catcher and I'm like, hey, dude, anywhere but the head. Just anywhere but the head, baby. I'm okay with you hitting me in the back. You hit me in the head, we got a problem. And they just looked at me and nodded. I mean, it's just, whether you like it or not, whether we sit around, you know, setting fires, yelling about, oh, they threw at me. It's part of the game. It's been part of the game for 200 years. Whether we like it or not, it is part of the game. And quite frankly, part of it I like because it adds that emotional aspect that we got last night.
Your guy Lucas Giolito was brilliant last night, and that was just a tremendous matchup of two superior starting pitchers until it got into extra innings, and then all of a sudden, poof, people are on the bases. I don't mind experimentation. I'm not some rock-ribbed baseball conservative demanding zero change, but that was the first time for me that it really felt forced, awkward, tacked on, weird, unfair, whatever you want to say.
See, I don't see why it's unfair. Both teams had the exact same situation. So I in no way think
it felt weird. It was 0-0.
It felt weird because the White Sox lost. That's why it felt weird. If the White Sox won right now, you'd be on the air completely talking about how great this rule is. Maybe not.
Nah, you know me better than that. I don't mind. I generally don't mind the rule, but I can be honest when I say it felt weird.
Okay, you are right. You wouldn't have said that. But I will. I actually like the rule, and I'll explain why I like the rule. Major League Baseball's stance on the rule is very, very simple, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It protects pitchers' arms. It keeps games from going into deeper innings. They've already done this for 3 years. They've shown that it's an uptick of games ending in the 10th inning up to 75% rather than 46% the year before. It keeps teams from abusing the taxi squad, which depletes their minor league system, specifically AAA, which also causes a lot of injuries. This is actually not a bad rule for baseball and for keeping players healthy. It's also a great way to move the game along. As much as we occasionally like talking about, man, did you see that 23-inning game? Do you really want to sit down and watch a 23-inning game? And especially right now, look at teams like the Phillies and Mets. They're playing double headers all over the place at the moment for making up for games from a week ago. Those games go into extra innings. We're talking about 25-inning days.
That's a sobering thought if there ever was one. And we had a rule change happen just today. Since we're on this, we got the news over Twitter from various places that Major League Baseball wants to move the rubber back in the Atlantic League to 61 feet, 6 inches. You already are making faces. What are your thoughts?
It's stupid. It's pointless. I don't know why it's happening. They talked about moving it to 62 feet a couple of years ago. And now with Major League Baseball's new basically ownership of the minor leagues and the new partnerships with the Atlantic League and other independent leagues, basically Major League Baseball is going to be able to ram through any rule they want, and they have a full field of testing sites to do it with in Indy Ball. I don't know why this is happening. I truly don't. No, it makes no sense to anybody. Everyone I've spoken to in Major League Baseball has yet to give me a single example of why this makes sense. They've even gone as far as saying, well, we think it'll help offense. I actually would tend to believe it might actually help pitchers. Off-speed pitches, spin rate is becoming the new thing. You move it back at 1 foot, okay, velocity is no longer the king. Spin rate becomes king. Now we're going to start seeing different type of cutters, two-seamers that are definitely going to have different action. And we're also talking about a time in baseball where people are starting to finally pay attention to pitchers doctoring baseballs. Can you imagine what the spin rate's going to be at 61 feet away? That's going to be impossible to hit. Basically, have you ever tried to hit like a professional wiffle ball? The ball goes in every possible direction. The ball starts behind you and then goes over the plate. It's not exactly possible to hit. That's what baseball is going to become if they just keep this going.
Yeah, blitz ball. I've seen it. It was actually like, I think the Dude Perfect guys did it with Chris Bryant. When you can, the guys who can control one of those blitz balls that dances around like a cartoon. I don't know if it's going to get that bad, but you're right about what they're figuring out they can make baseballs do, understanding seam shifted wake and some of these other things. And while we're talking about it, let's see where you are on Trevor Bauer. And, you know, there's a UCLA connection in there, but this is a guy.
Yeah, we did play together.
That's what I was going to ask, and I know he was not known for having a whole lot of friends in that dugout, and right now he's not making any friends. He's taken on Ken Rosenthal. He's calling him out for his reporting, and he is he's taking all these slings and arrows for being the guy who apparently is the first to be known to be investigated for using substances to impart spin.
You know, you could say what you want about certain reporters out there. I'm sure. You know, you go on Twitter, you see plenty of people have things to say about, especially MLB reporters. Ken Rosenthal is about as straight a shooter as it gets in all of the world. I don't think I've ever met a guy who has never once had an ounce of malice towards anything. So calling him a gossip columnist to me is absolutely insane. As for Bauer, yeah, he did not make a ton of friends at UCLA. He was a little bit younger. I was a senior. He was still technically a senior in high school when he came and joined me at UCLA. He graduated a year early and played with us when he was 17. Yeah, there was some adjustment period for him going on over at UCLA, and he's had those same adjustments in pro ball. He is definitely doesn't carry around the greatest reputation, but you know it goes both ways. I've seen guys that do love him. And I've seen a lot of guys that truly hate him. Now, him being investigated for the doctoring of the baseballs, if you didn't see this coming before the season started, I don't know what else to tell you, because it's very clear that Major League Baseball was going to do this, and they were picking one person and one person only, and it was Trevor Bauer. And if it's only for one reason and one reason only, Trevor Bauer won't shut up. You think they're going to look into Gerrit Cole? No.
Gerrit Cole goes out, pitches, and keeps his mouth shut for the rest of the week. And he goes out and pitches again. Trevor Bauer has got something to say about everything, and he makes sure the camera's on him at all times. There's a pitfall to that, because when you're sitting around doctoring baseballs, you're going to get noticed. And when you're constantly going out there calling out Rob Manfred, listen, I'm not a Rob Manfred fan, but I don't think he's going to sit around enjoying being called out by last year's Cy Young winner.
But to that end, he was also trying to say that other teams were doing it. He's called out the Astros by name before, long before the cheating scandal ever occurred. Does he have basis to his claims? You mentioned the former Astro, Gerrit Cole, but he wasn't on the team at that time when Bauer was talking about the Astros specifically.
He tried to allude a little bit towards Cole. Cole and Bauer have a very storied rivalry with each other. So when Cole went over to the Astros, you saw how his spin rate picked up and how he became the Gerrit Cole that he is today. I don't know whether or not that's what lit a fire under Trevor Bauer. I truly cannot speak to that, but the timing does seem pretty interesting. Listen, if I hate to break this to you, they all do it. They all do it. Everybody doctors the ball. There is so much stuff on every ball. There is more pine tar on a baseball than there is baseball. There's not a single guy that doesn't do it. It's sunscreen and rosin usually. Usually they got some rosin and sunscreen. You can't really check it. There's a rosin bag right behind the mound. Every ball is doctored. Now you got things like a certain mix called Pelican. A lot of guys like using Pelican because it's a very pine tar substance. The problem is a lot of guys pull their fastballs. Listen, they all do it. If Major League Baseball is going to crack down on it, actually crack down on it. This is not a new thing. In my career, I only saw one guy get tossed out of a game for doctoring a baseball. And the only reason he got tossed out is because it was that blatantly obvious. And when I say blatantly obvious, it looked like his right arm had been dipped in a pool. And he was just constantly touching it, endlessly, endlessly. And the balls were doing things that didn't make sense. So, yeah, it has been a long-time problem. Any pitcher that sits around saying, oh, it's for grip, no, it's not. You're increasing your spin rate by nearly 1,000. That's why you're doing it.
Talking with Cody Decker, as we do weekly on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. He is a Score baseball expert here on Sports Radio 670. And I saw that for the Olympics, the Team Israel is putting the band back together, and I did not see your name associated with it. A lot of familiar names. This is an aging team. The Yiddish term would be the Altacockers are going to battle here for Team Israel. But what do you think of this particular iteration of your guys?
Well, it's the Olympics. It's not exactly the same caliber of baseball you're going to see in the WBC. I'd be shocked if Israel doesn't win. I mean, you got a bunch of major leaguers on that team, whether they're 1 year out of the game or 2 years out of the game. Look around the rest of the teams. You seeing a whole lot of major league at-bats in there? I'm not going to be seeing them.
As long as the mensch on the bench comes back, the giant.
No. That's mine. They don't get to take what's mine.
Wow. There you have it. Laying down territorial, laying down the law.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's in my other room, and I'm not on the team. Listen, they asked me to join the team. When I retired, I was very much considering it, but of course I joined these lovely folks over here at Odyssey, and I couldn't exactly go and leave my show and go get dual citizenship in Israel and then leave and play in Japan for 2 months. It would have been a bit tricky. I wouldn't have been able to come on this show all the time and complain about the Brewers.
Should we even ask you about the discrepancies we've seen in umpiring over the weekend? We pointed out the Wilson Contreras runner's interference that also looked like he didn't touch the bag. There was the ridiculous Michael Conforto leaning into the pitch that had the SNY broadcast upset because it led to a Marlins win. And then we saw Boehm and the home plate controversy on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, quick question. What is replay for? Why is replay the longest sequence in baseball? Replay, anytime there's a close play, one, every manager has a 20-second window. By the way, that 20-second window feels like an eternity. You're talking about shortening up the game. Replay is a disaster in Major League Baseball. And you know what? I'd let them off with the pace of play thing if they would get the calls right. What planet am I on? It wasn't even close to touching the plate the other day. The Conforto play, that was clear as day, a strike by Anthony Bass. It was a maddening. This is a weird, weird time in Major League Baseball. That union has got to be the strongest thing in the world that I have to sit around and watch an Angel Hernandez game every week and have to see his name trending because he's so awful at his job. Now, let's not forget that Angel Hernandez is the only umpire in the history of Major League Baseball that was federal court ruled was just a bad umpire.
Yeah, he tried to say that he was there was a discrimination against him, mm-hmm. and they're like, "Yeah, no, we've looked at the evidence, and no one's discriminating against you because you're bad."
Yeah, the judge just looked down at the evidence, looked up at him, and said, "No, it turns out you just suck."
Still employed. Uh-huh, and Joe West was in the news earlier for a defamation suit with Paula Duca. It's like umpire bingo.
It's just a very odd time in the umpiring world. And listen, I don't think we're going to get any lawsuits if we just implement robot umps. That's all I'm saying. If you got data behind home plate, he ain't getting sued.
Cody Decker, fun as always. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking next week.
Gentlemen. Yes. Layla, I'm calling you gentlemen because that's just kind of a general thing that I always do. It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Dan, you're wonderful. Raheem,
I'm good with
you're
that.
Wonderful.
I'm good with that.
We'll take
Thank
wonderful.
You, Cody.
That's Cody Decker. So he joins us at this time during baseball season to talk all things baseball. When we come back, you don't want to miss this. An actual sports occurrence, one of the rarest occurrences in sports, rarest achievements in sports happened. And the broadcast of it is phenomenal. And it may be an actual situation you yourself have faced. And maybe you remember seeing a highlight. I don't remember if it was NBC Sports World or maybe it was ABC Wide World of Sports. But there was this famous grainy videotape of this achievement. It happened again. The broadcasters knew how big a deal it was. They went absolutely crazy. I will say I have faced it down multiple times before. I have never come close to actually fulfilling this achievement. But It did happen on a professional level, and the call of it is awesome. That's next on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
If that Cubs offense gets downed by a bunch of runs, the confidence for them to actually get back in the game is extremely low.
30th in average, 30th in on-base percentage, 30th in WRC+, 28th in slugging. They can't hit!
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Layla, I don't know how much of a bowler you are or at any point in your life have been, but I don't know if you've ever stared down an actual 7-10 split at the end of the alley.
I reported bowling for NBC for over a year here and there.
You a bowling reporter? How cool
yes.
is that?
It was a lot of fun. I never thought I would learn so much about oil patterns, things of that nature. Also, shout out to Sean Rash, who is a Chicago area bowling, like he's a PBA tournament bowler, and he's a huge Cubs fan and a big sports fan. We got to have him on the show at some point.
Well, we will take you live to a PBA tour event, not really live, in Reno, Nevada. And this is Anthony Neuer against Jacob Butterf. And he looked at the 7-10 split. He's 18 years old, and they call him the Ginger Assassin. He looks he's wearing a mask, but I kept picturing Boog Shambi underneath. If Boog Shambi were a professional bowler, this is what he would look like. And this is a major sports achievement. This is rarer than perfect games or cycles or anything like that at this level, and especially doing it on television. No one has done it on TV in the last 30 years. And I will take you to Fox Sports and announcer Rob Stone.
See that ball breaking loose early.
7-10. Come on, man.
Right through the face, leaving the 7-10. The 7-10 only been made on television three times in the history of professional bowling on TV.
Come on, kid, do it.
Oh, he did it! He did it! He did it! He got the 7-10, Randy! Oh, he God. Did it! Woo-hoo-hoo! My goodness, the Ginger Assassin just dropped the 7-10. You bet, kid. You bet. Oh, man. Give me some oxygen and water to spare the game. Brought to you by Guaranteed Rate. If you believe it, you can do it. Guaranteed Rate, believe you will. I believe the Ginger Assassin can drop the 7-10.
Oh, man.
It actually came off of the bowling ball.
Insane.
Into the seven.
The replay is amazing. And he's wearing like this American flag shirt that has the hammer written on the front. This big sort of porcine looking redhead. And he the lefty with a huge back arm swing. And he spins it left to right toward the 10 pin, hits the inside of the 10 pin. The 10 pin ricochets off the sidewall, off the ball. Before the ball could disappear down the back, it caromed off the ball and into the seven, knocking down the seven.
He did it! He got the 7-10, Randy! Oh, he did God. It!
That's awesome.
Right?
That's
appropriate.
It absolutely is. Bowling made for TV is the show. It's that's the whole bit. Like, it is a bit of the bit, as you like to say. And getting the 10 pin to kick into the 7, which is what the term would be in a bowling broadcast, like he said, has only been caught on camera now 4 times. That is outrageous.
And give me some oxygen and water to spare the game.
That's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it so much. And we should embrace our local bowling talent. Sean Rash, great dude. We should get him on now that I'm thinking about it out loud.
Well, Terry and I had, what was her name, who was a friend of the show? Why am I blanking on her name? Amanda? Like, she was the best bowler around, and she was a guest of the show, and she joined us in studio, and she was just hanging out with us, because Terry and I are old enough to have grown up with weekly televised bowling. It was on ABC every Saturday. It was Chris Schenkel on ABC, and you watched it. You watched Dick Weber or Mark Roth or whoever it was, and that was and you'd see it. And
who do you think you are? I am.
And the trick shot guy, the guy with the two balls. Well, that's, you know, hopefully it's
that's a lot of people.
Yeah, but the guy who would roll them both at the same time. What was it? Carmen Basilio? Was that his name?
I'd have to look up all the historical bowling characters. I did the Bolero Elite series. That was the event that I did for NBC.
Bolero Elite. Ooh, that's fancy sounding. Ravel's Bolero Elite. But I think it was Carmen Basilio, and he had one in each hand, and he would roll them, and they would cross midway down. And then he'd knock down all the pins with them. It's one of the actual cool sort of brushes with greatness I've ever had. Is at Mike North's Bolarama, I bowled with Dick Weber. And it was amazing. And he was probably in his early 70s at the time, and he's still easy 240, 250, you know, without even breaking a sweat. But that's probably the closest I've ever come. No, that has to be the absolute winner of absolutely participating in a sport with a Hall of Fame, like, first team legend of that sport.
That's so cool. And the fun thing about bowling is some of the pros can switch to being broadcasters if they're not participating in particular events. Jason Belmonte, who's considered one of the best now, he has a two-handed bowling release. This is more than you ever wanted to know. But he's been an announcer, too, and then come back and forth. So I love that they can do that. So sometimes you get wonderful analysts who are the best in their game talking about it, too, and they're genuinely excited for the other bowlers.
The Ginger Assassin can drop the 7-10. Oh, man.
I'm really mad at myself for not being able to remember the... Come on, old Boers and Bernstein listeners, help me. What was the name of the women's bowler who we had on a couple times on the show? She was so much fun. There was a sound drop we used to play of her. And now I would recognize the name, I just can't recall it. And now I feel bad because I should. So there it is, Deandra Asbatty. Deandra Asbatty. Cool. She's currently 44th ranked, and I thankfully ran into the name because I was scrolling quickly enough. Deandra. That was it. So, yes, we always did cover bowling. Cubs are coming up. The ailing Cubs. They sent Kyle Hendricks away from the park because he is ill. But we have a lot of thank yous today. Thank you to Mike Florio, to Steve Stone, to Cody Decker, to Connor O'Donnell, to Brian Gertsch, to Jordan Malley, and Jay Zawoski. Tomorrow, Ian Happ is going to join us, and we are also going to talk to MLB.com statistician Sarah Langs, as well as some Bulls talk coming your way with Cody Westlund. Yeah, I know. And by the way, it wasn't Carmen Vecilio. That was the boxer. It was Andy Carmine Salvino. That's who it was. Not Carmen Basilio.
It's okay.
Carmine
we'll get
Salvino.
There eventually.
Thank you.
I'm so excited about Sarah. This is wonderful news.
Yeah, she's good. So we'll look forward to talking MLB stats with her. Next up, you have Cubs baseball on the score.
Who do you think you are? I am.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.